Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst at friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
I'm good, man. Blowing up all over Twitter today with my
monster tweet.
473 likes, 146 retweets, and 81 comments at 9:19 Central Time, if anyone's counting.
It's amazing, like, being a jerk, like, how much that suits
you. I'm not being a jerk. I call things like I see it. And
it's amazing you always see it a certain way.
And you should see my mentions, man.
Oh, I'm not going to go through those because I really don't care that much.
People are sending me threats, man. I'm kind of scared.
Yeah, that's what you get. You can't hate on Cubs Twitter the way you
Cubs
do.
Cubs Twitter has found me.
Yeah, and not expected. It's a public website. Like, people are going to find you. But joining us today, getting away from Matt, joining us today is a new friend of the podcast, Walter McMichael from Lenny Melnick Fantasy Sports. Walter, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going, guys? I'm not surprised that Matt had a anti-Cubs take, but I actually agree with him on this one. I think that slide was pretty insane. But for a lot of times I see him like, he's got a little bit of the Cards bias going on.
I'll admit it sometimes, you know, maybe 10% of the time my tweets are bad, but 90% are pretty good.
Mine's probably the opposite. I'm more like 10% are good and 90% are really bad. But yeah, I've been listening for a while. It's awesome to be on. Thanks for having me.
Of course. And you and I are actually in a head-to-head competition right now. And you started off pretty slow there, Walter, with in the fantasy movie draft.
Oh, the fantasy movie draft. Yes, yeah, solo, not doing too well.
No, it was a pretty disappointing first overall pick that you took with Solo.
I thought Star, like come on, Star Wars, like that.
The
just
Paul Goldschmidt of first rounders.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's disappointing. I was between that and The Incredibles too. Those are my two that I was gonna choose between. But
it's all right. At least you weren't the guy who took Mamma Mia. But anyways, why don't you let people know where you can reach on social media, and then tell people a little bit about yourself, where you work, what you do.
Yeah, I do a podcast, Real Fake Baseball. I know you guys had Paul Martin on in the off season, and he's my co-host with me. We do that on LennyMelnickFantasySports.com, and you know, Lenny has his podcast every morning, 9 a.m. Well, weekday morning, and he just goes through the box stores and stuff. So that's kind of where we met up and started up just doing a podcast together. And I write for Big3Sports.com. I've really been slacking all around recently, but I'm going to kick it into gear and put some more stuff out there soon. Those were the jobs that you're talking about, not my actual job, right?
Just I mean, the, if you want to tell us about your actual job, but I don't think...
Oh, no, that's so boring.
Yeah, I don't think people care that much. And, you know, we can appreciate slacking here, because that's why we still have Matt employed.
Not only am I employed, I have somewhat of an ownership stake.
Yeah, 33%.
So it shows you, you know,
it's all like your dreams, kids. It's like the Matthew Berry thing, right?
Yeah.
Nothing good comes from hustling.
Yeah, hashtag never
right.
hustle.
Just back your way into things and you'll be set.
Yep. You guys are role models for the kids. All right, let's talk about some baseball and jump on in. Before we do, I'll remind everybody, you can reach Matt on Twitter at MDTompFWFB for all the anti-Cubs takes, good, bad, and indifferent. And then every once in a while, he tweets other stuff. And then you can reach me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. You can follow Friends of Fantasy Benefits in general at Fantasy Benefits. All right, let's talk about some guys. Let's start off with a guy who's been pretty hot as of late, Ronald Guzman, hitting home runs and manning first base for the Texas Rangers. Matt, what are your thoughts on Ronald Guzman?
He's kind of been waiting in the wings for a while here for Texas. He was in that big 2011 international class with Nomar Mazara, more famously, and you know he and Jairo Berres, and who hasn't turned out yet, and Guzman fit in. He was a big dollar player. I believe he was like a $3 million signing. They paid a lot for this first base only guy. And you look at him, and you know, you don't know much about him. You would think he's going to hit for a lot of power, being 6'4 and 225 pounds. And I mean, I've seen him listed at 6'5 at other resources. Either way, he's a big, tall, skinny, lanky guy. And right now, he doesn't have enough, doesn't carry enough power to be an everyday first baseman on my fantasy squad. I'm talking before this latest, you know, ride the hot hand kind of binge he's on right now. I don't even know if I would have rostered him in 20-team leagues because I'm not a big fan of the skill set. I need my first baseman the way I construct my fantasy teams to hit for a lot of power. And right now, Guzman is a poor man's Jose Martinez in the sense that he's a big, tall guy who doesn't hit for as much power as you think. And the defense isn't really good enough to keep him in the lineup. Which is why I'm kind of confused with Texas throwing Gallo in left and not calling up Calhoun, because I think Calhoun's a better hitter than Guzman. I don't think he's got much staying power. But I'm kind of out on Guzman for now and even for the future. I just don't anticipate hitting for enough pop. I think if he reaches the 20 home run mark in a full season, I would be, you know, I think that's a solid win. But I just don't know if the batting average and the plate skills are good enough to survive that. He's got some upside, but I'll let someone else take the shot. Not my kind of guy.
Walter, what is your thoughts on Ronald Guzman?
Man, I don't know how I'll follow up that ringing endorsement of Ronald Guzman there. But, yeah, I'm kind of with Matt here. I'm not a big fan. He's kind of, like you said, he's like a big guy, but he's lanky. And he really does swing and miss pretty often for a guy who's supposed to have like a more hit tool over power. And, yeah, I'm just not. I think he just had a hot week. And
he's James Loney.
Oh, he's rough. Not. That's mean.
That's just cruel. I don't think he's James Loney. I guess James Loney did have some good seasons there, but that's kind of like the like slap hitting first baseman comp, I guess. But yeah, Guzman, I don't think he's going to be too helpful this year, and I think he's just like a more of a wait and see in dynasty leagues. But yeah, I wouldn't want him on like. Even in like 15 team leagues, I wouldn't even be looking to add Guzman.
I think he could be a John Olerud type without the walks. I think he's going to grow into some power. I don't think he'll ever be like a 30 home run guy, but I mean Olerud was a guy who you know hit for average, hit 290, and, you know 280 to 300 most years, and hit for a little bit of power, and I think
did he have a 31% K rate?
He did not. So, but I don't think he's going to have a 31% K rate throughout his career. He's shown around 20% K rates.
Yeah, good bat the ball guy.
And that in this day and age is John Olerud-esque. You know, I mean, we're in a different era. He's one of those guys that you, like you said, Matt, you think by his size he would hit for a little bit more power. He's still young. So, I mean, he's going to fill out a little bit more as he gets older, and maybe some of that raw power gets unlocked as he kind of gets a little bit bigger. And so I think in a Dynasty League, Keeper League, he's an interesting guy to, you know, roster, especially in deeper formats. But in terms of this year, I think this is mostly just a hot streak that we're not going to benefit a ton from. So I think if you had him on your roster, you probably just got his best, 3 weeks of the season.
Yeah, I want to say one thing about it. I don't know if you guys have been having this problem, I know I certainly have, but judging how much power a certain player is going to have, because it just seems like, okay, so like Mookie Betts, like no one expected him to have the power he has. Like Jose Ramirez, Ozzy Albies, of course, this year, Lindor, all these guys.
Gleyber Torres.
Yeah, I was gonna. Yep. I was just about to say him too. And
Luis Urias in the minor leagues right now. He's got elite bat to ball skills, and his strikeout rates been under 10% in some full season leagues he's been in. But like he's a guy who doesn't project for much power. But the bat-to-ball plays, and you got to remember, the baseball is different in the minor leagues than it is in the major leagues. So that changes things a little bit. And you saw the home run Urias hit in the Arizona Fall League that was like 430 feet. That doesn't look like a guy that doesn't have much power, right? So it's really hard. Yeah, it's really hard to, you know, for someone that evaluates prospects as best I can, and that's really hard. I've begun to – I always kind of favored the hit tool anyways in my evaluations, but now it's a little bit more than the hit tool. Now it's contact rate especially. I feel like guys that make a lot of contact get elevated or are going to have more success. They're going to, I guess, overachieve in quotes, you know what I mean, as far as what you think they might do. And, you know, looking at back at Guzman – his minor league numbers indicate that there's more bat to ball than he's showing right now. So, yeah, there might be a little smidge of upside. But, again, you know, to circle back, I'm still not that interested in because he's a first baseman. If you play another position, sure. But I still need my first baseman to hit more than 20, and that seems to be the upside for
I don't think you necessarily need your first baseman to hit more than 20, but I just don't think there's a sexy enough profile here outside of your deep, you know, AL-only leagues. Or, like, I mean, I've got him in – I have him in the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational because my team is so hurt. he's one of my utils right now. You know, outside of, a deeper league like that, like, he's not viable yet in a 10- or 12-team league. And I don't know that he is in the near future. All right, let's move on and talk about Brandon Nimmo. Nimmo is a guy that I've really liked, and he's a huge asset in on-base leagues. He's not always guaranteed for playing time, which makes him kind of an interesting conversation right now. So, Brandon, or sorry, Walter, why don't you give me your thoughts on Brandon Nimmo?
Yeah, just like you, Nimmo is a guy that I have always really liked because, I don't know, I've always just liked guys that can really get on base, and that's his main calling card. I don't think he has too much power. He doesn't really have too much speed either, but the thing is, the Mets are so weird. I don't think anyone can predict the Mets, what they're going to do with playing time and everything. I mean, they signed Jose Bautista, you got Jay Bruce all angry about it, not playing, and I think he's one of their best players, and with uncertain playing time, I think you just have to go with the most skilled players, and especially in OBP leagues, like, he's got a 425 OBP right now, and I don't think it's going to be that high, but it's going to be a plus OBP. So he's an asset there. Batting average, I think he's probably only going to hit around 250. I know he's hitting in the 270s right now, but he makes a lot of good contact, a lot of hard contact, hits a lot of fly balls. So I think that might get him to the 18 to 20 home run range and good OBP. So he should be able to have the counting stats. I really like him.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Nimmo?
Yeah, I like Nimmo too. I think the biggest question for Nimmo is finding Nimmo playing time. But that's, you know, that's the Mets are weird in a lot of ways. And as a Cardinals fan, I see one of their issues is, you know, finding enough playing time for all the outfielders, and the Cardinals are in the same situation. But I kind of feel like Nimmo should be leading off every day against a right-handed pitcher, no questions asked, with the way that he gets on base. And anytime you're leading off, you know, if that happens, Mickey Callaway should, I think he's, when he's playing, I think he is leading off. That's 65% of the league, roughly, is about right-handed pitching. And if he's getting that big of bulk of playing time, he's rosterable in 15 to 20 team leagues just because of that alone. And obviously his OBP is not going to settle in at 425, but even last year he hit 260 in 215 plate appearances. But his OBP was 379. I don't see any reason why it can't be that again this year. He's off to a hell of a start. He's already banked at 424. So, I mean, if you got him for that, then congratulations. He's showing a little bit of power too, four home runs and three stolen bases, which is both on a per game, per at bat basis, better than they were last year in AAA. Or in Flushing and in, or excuse me, in Queens and in Vegas in AAA. So keep that in mind. So I think there's a little bit of something here with the power uptick. It's never going to be great. I think he's going to top out as like a 10 to 12 home run guy. Maybe a smidge more with this little era. He could turn into a 12 to 15 home run guy with the way the ball jumps off the bats nowadays. But that's a solid player in 15 to 20 team formats. And in OBP formats, I think he's rosterable in 12 teamers.
Yeah, I mean, he currently has, to Matt's point, against right-handed hitters, he's got right-handed pitchers, he's got a 462 OBP.
Yeah, that'll play anywhere.
Yes, I mean, you know, even if daily leagues, even if you're just putting him in when they're facing righties, I think he at least, you know, bumps up your OBP. I mean, so far in, you know, average leagues as well, he's batting, I believe, 309 versus right-handed.
We talked a little bit about DFS plays. He's a hell of a DFS play against righties.
Huge if you're trying to go DFS deep. Play versus righties.
Yeah.
So, you know, I worry about the playing time situation because this almost feels like a Wilmer Flores-type situation where they go out of their way to not play this guy.
If you can kind of platoon those two players, that's kind of ideal. I don't know how you would do it because they play different positions, but Flores kills lefties and Nimmo's like,
well, I think Flores just went on the DL, didn't
he?
Yeah,
he did. Yeah, him and AJ Ramos went on the DL today. But, you know, there's no reason why, especially with the struggles that and injury issues that the Mets have been dealing with in the outfield, that Nimmo shouldn't play on a pretty regular basis right now, and so I would be rostering him, but I think he's one of those guys that once the situation kind of reclouds itself, especially if Conforto starts to really get going and Cespedes, you know, gets healthy and things like that, you know, be okay with just dropping him. He's one of those guys that's almost like a streamer for the bottom part of your hitting lineup, so... let's move on and talk about another guy who I was kind of touting a little bit as a sleeper in deeper formats coming into the season, and he has been truly atrocious until the last couple of weeks. For the season, he is hitting 221, 285, 298. However, he has 8 stolen bases, and over the last... couple of weeks, he's been much better. Any interest in Adam Engel there, Matt?
Maybe he should just try to increase his launch angle.
But
seriously, though, you did not give a glowing introduction to the 2015 Arizona Fall League MVP, Adam Engel.
This is why Arizona Fall League numbers don't matter.
So that's going to be on his Hall of Fame plaque when he gets enshrined.
When he gets enshrined to the Hall of Very Good,
or
Hall of Mediocre.
I saw him short, but no. But I mean, for real though, you nailed it with Ingles' one skill, and that's stolen bases
and defense. He's a good defense player
for fantasy purposes, right? Fantasy purposes, he's a stolen base only guy. That's it. There's nothing else here. OBP is currently at 279. This is during the middle of his hot streak. The offensive numbers are very, very ugly. If you watch him play in person, you understand why the swing isn't great. He's a right-handed hitter as well, so he's on the wrong end of a lot of platoons. I actually was kind of touting Charlie Tilson to win that center field job this year, and that hasn't materialized.
Another AFL All-Star from a couple years ago.
Yep, and they're similar type players. Obviously, Tilson's a left-handed hitter and has a little better hit tool, but I think I have a little better hit tool than Engel does as well. So 55 WRC plus, so he's half as bad as a league average player right now, or half as good, I should say, on offense. But defense will keep him in the lineup because he's one of the best center fielders in the game. He's got double plus wheels. That's really it.
All right, Walter, any thoughts on Adam Engel?
Yeah, I was going to say about Engel that I actually drafted him in one of the 50-round draft and hold NFBC leagues last year.
Mm-hmm.
And he was horrible in his little bit that he played last year. I know he hit like 160. But I don't know. I don't think there's much there. I don't mind owning like a Jared Dyson who, you know, at least have some batting average with his stolen bases, but Engel gives you absolutely nothing outside of it. Like it's just if you need stolen bases, that's all. And he's going to hurt you everywhere else, like legitimately hurt you.
Yeah, over his last 2 weeks, he's hitting 256, 310, 333. The only reason we're talking about him is because in that time period, he's got 3 stolen bases. And so he's one of those guys that if he could ever figure out a way to get on base at even just an average clip, He could legitimately steal 40 to 50 bases, and maybe even more than that. I just don't know that he is ever going to be able to get to that point. And we're talking about a guy who's 26 years old and doesn't have a long track record of any sort of success, even in the minor leagues. So, you know, it's one of those things where I think AL-only leagues, he's obviously viable. If you're in a deeper 15-team league and you're hurting for speed, he's a guy to use against maybe left-handed pitching. But, you know, even that, he's only hitting 200 against lefties this year, so it's not super impressive. All right, let's go from a guy who has been absolutely atrocious to a guy who I think gets perpetually underrated, and that's my boy Scooter Gennett. And I call him my boys because I touted this guy as a sleeper guy for years and then got off him the year before he broke out.
Nice. So you're the sleeper in the bust is fitting for you then.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely the bust in that conversation. So.
Spore does that for pitchers, right, Paul? He has notorious luck for being on somebody and then
early. We're both pretty good at being a year early on a lot of guys.
Right.
Yeah, no. But for me, especially Brewers for some reason. Jimmy Nelson, Scooter Gennett, Jonathan VR, you know. Walter, what are your thoughts on Scooter Gennett?
Yeah, I think that I kind of wrote him off coming into the year as one of those random guys that just had a career year last year. And I think I'm going to take my L here and say that he's just a good hitter. I think that's just what it is. He's going to be a good fantasy asset. He's still hitting for power. He's hitting for average. His BABIP is extremely high, so it's going to come down, and he'll probably settle into more as like a 280 hitter. But I mean, he's still really good, and he went pretty low in drafts this year because I think the majority of people were like me and kind of just assumed that, oh, Scooter Gennett, yeah, I know him. He's terrible. So let's just move on, and we'll take the next shiny object who hasn't actually had a good year, which I have a million of those on my team. But, yeah, he's just a good hitter. Every time I watch him hit, he just continues to rake, and he hits a good amount of fly balls, and his hard contact is good. It's just all around a good profile. There's really not too much other than that massive BABIP that you can really point to.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Gennett?
I'm kind of, you know, I echo a lot of what Walter said. Gennett is, I wrote him off. I don't want to say wrote him off, but I downplayed what he did last year as his career season, and he won't repeat it, but he's well on his way right now. 2 weeks ago, I was offered a trade. I turned it down right away, and I'm kind of kicking myself for it. I would receive Gennett, and I would give up Josh Donaldson, and now I kind of wish I made that deal. Because Gennett looks like he could be similar to Donaldson and kind of a pop-up guy. If you remember, it took Donaldson a little bit to get going. I'm not saying he's going to be the next guy, but it's, you know, I'm all for those non-traditional paths to major league success. And, you know, the Reds were, Gennett was fantastic last year, and the Reds were still kind of trying to hand Nick Senzel his job. The spring training didn't work out. Senzel ultimately went to AAA for the right move, and now he's finally returning, by the way, from his vertigo reoccurrence. But Gennett is now a force in that lineup. Him and Votto got to be the 3-4 guys for long term for that team, at least, you know, the next couple seasons. And his ADP was over 200 coming into this season. I wouldn't be surprised if he's going around pick 120 or so next year because he's fantastic. And it's a simple approach for him. Pull the ball, hit the ball in the air, and be more patient. He's done all three of those, and it's worked, and it's a perfect ballpark for it. So it's worked out in his favor.
Yeah, I mean, the ballpark definitely helps. I mean, there's some massive regression coming, especially versus left-handed pitching where he's got a 485 BABIP. And, you know, so, I mean, I think this is a guy that obviously there's going to be some regression, especially in the average department coming, but, he's like Walter said, like, this is always kind of just, he's always been kind of a good hitter. And it's just a matter of, one, he's actually getting playing time, full-time playing time, and not being dicked around by the Brewers now that he's in Cincinnati the last 2 years. He's getting an opportunity to play. And I think one of the things people were scared about was the Nick Senzel coming up. And, oh, my God, what do they then do with Eugenio Suarez? And what do they do with Jose Peraza? And what do they do with Scooter Gennett? But, you know, you and I kind of were talking about this prior to starting. Like, you know, there's the Cody Bellinger rule now, which is, you know, don't worry about where a guy has a chance to play. You know, bet on the talent. And, you know, usually we talk about that more in terms of prospects who are coming up and, you know, where are they going to play when the guy they're replacing comes back off the DL or off of paternity leave or off or wherever. You know, if a guy is good and hits, the teams are going to find a place for him to play 95% of the time. And so I'm not worried that once Senzel's up and they need to shuffle around that roster, that Gennett is going to lose playing time, and I think that is what lowered his ADP coming into the season. You know, rest of the way, you know, obviously I don't think he's hitting 340 or 347, I believe, after tonight. But, I mean, this is a guy that I think can easily hit 290, hit another 15 home runs, and at second base, that's not a bad player.
Yeah, the Nick Senzel thing was part of the reason, because I thought before the season, right, and I think it's kind of proven it out now that Eugenio Suarez is just a really good baseball player all around. Like, he's a good fantasy option, but he's a really good just baseball player. He's good on offense, good on defense, just all around good. And I didn't think they were gonna move him off. I actually think it would probably be Peraza that would
Jose Peraza,
because I think he's just I think he's.
He's a super utility guy.
Yeah,
he's a pinch runner defensive replacement that's batting second every day for them. So
yeah. Now he'll move into a util role for sure, which makes the Todd Frazier deal look awesome.
Look, I just need those Peraza stolen bases in TGFBI. That's all I need.
Those. I mean, like, you know, like, don't get me wrong. Like, people were overhyping Jose Peraza coming into last year because of what he did in that short stint in 2016. But, like, people, like, crapped all over Jose Peraza coming in this year, and he had, like, no price attached to him. And you know he's going to get 20 stolen bases. And, like, that has value. That's
what it was. And it's an average league. His OBP is awful, but his average is
palatable.
It's not like Adam Engel that we were talking about. So.
Or Adam Engel.
Always gets dragged, but... But yeah, I think Peraza would be the guy. I think Scooter Gennett he's played his way into assured playing time, and that is something that has to be accounted for.
Mm-hmm. Let's move on and talk about Christian Villanueva, who I'm pretty sure I crapped on him at one point on this podcast earlier in the season, but all the dude does is continue to just hit bombs. He's got 14 home runs this season. 31 runs batted in. You know, the triple slash isn't great with a 235, 304, 556, but if you're looking for bombs, Villanueva is a guy who can offer it. So, Walter, what are your thoughts on Christian Villanueva?
Yeah, you guys talk about DFS plays. Just play Christian Villanueva when he's facing a lefty. Just do it. Like, he's hitting 360 with 10 home runs versus lefties. That he just obliterates left-handed pitching, and I think that's just what he is. I think eventually he's just gonna become one of those, like, Danny Valencia, like, lefty mashers. I don't really see much here because he just can't handle right-handed pitching at all.
Matt, what's your thoughts?
Villanueva is kind of one of those super post-hype prospects. Remember, he was the Texas Ranger prospect and a Cubs prospect back in the day, and he ended up breaking his leg, and he missed all of 2016, and that was also the year Chris Bryant arrived, so that kind of has something to do with him, you know, not playing as much. In Chicago, they just let him go as a minor league free agent, and the Padres swooped in, and he's a really good, really, really good defensive player at third base. He's kind of like Matt Chapman light, except he's older than Chapman and less established, if that even makes any sense. The profile is kind of similar as far as not going to – well, he doesn't walk as much as Chapman does, but it's power and defense and low average, in the sense that they're similar in that way. And Villanueva, man, like you said, he destroys lefties, and he's even having bad luck against righties. I think there's a chance, you know, the chance his batting average might rebound a little bit. He's only hitting 175 against right-handed pitching right now with four home runs and 103 at-bats, so that's pretty terrible. I was surprised that San Diego gave up on Chase Headley as early as they did and kind of gave Villanueva essentially a full season to run away with the job. But it's also worth noting before you, you know, try to grab Villanueva, Padres' top one of their top prospects, Luis Urias, has been playing third base now in AAA. And so that one can only assume that means he's coming up pretty soon. Because whenever you have Freddie Galvis, the shortstop, you can't play anyone else there. So, I mean, so that could eat up into Villanueva's playing time. I know they have a hole at second base, but Jose Perella is probably going to fill that, especially with the outfield situation being what it is. Renfro coming back. Franchi Cordero is going to be around. Margot. Will Myers coming back, and whenever he does, he's going to play the outfield. So it's a little crowded there. So there's a chance he might be the odd man out, and they might be able to use him as a, you know, a hitter against lefties. But until then, you didn't pay anything for him, so you might as well ride it out.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think he, as guys get brought up and their team gets more healthy, I think he kind of settles into a short side platoon type guy. But I mean, that has some value in deeper formats because, like you guys mentioned, just absolutely murders left-handed pitching. It, you know, hitting 360, 407, 980 slug against left-handed pitching right now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He destroys. I think what I can't remember if it was yesterday that he murdered one off a lefty again.
It's got real power, too. It's, no, these home runs aren't cheap. They are like off the warehouse building out there, like. Kind of, but did he hit one on the roof? I think his first major league home run in San Diego, he hit one on the roof of the warehouse.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all if that's the case. Gets a little matchup against Wei-Yin Chen coming up here on Thursday. So for you DFS players, make sure he's in your lineup.
Nice.
Yeah. So yeah, but I don't know. I love power guys, but I don't love platoon power guys, and that's, I think, unfortunately, that's kind of the future. So for me, he's kind of like a sell high candidate if there is one. Even though I do agree with Matt, I think he's gotten a little unlucky against right-handed pitching, but I don't know that he's going to get enough run against them moving forward. As like I said, guys get called up and guys get healthy for him to turn around that bad luck.
Alex Fast might like this. Is Villanueva the offensive version of what's the name? Caleb Smith, because he's on a rebuilding team, so he's in the right situation to get playing time. I mean, how many other teams is Christian Villanueva going to get all these plate appearances for? If being honest,
yeah, that's
kind of like, you know.
Yeah, I like getting guys from bad teams. Just yeah, there's so much playing time available.
I don't care.
You just get it. Yeah, you get a chance to see, and then randomly they'll be really good. Like Caleb Smith has been. I have him on a couple teams actually, and I mean he's just been awesome for nothing. Like he didn't cost anything, and like Villanueva, he hasn't cost anything. And but yeah, I don't know. I feel like that Padres team is like their offense is kind of interesting. I don't get Jose Perella. I don't think he's going to be
good. I like Perella.
Perella, he just has no power. Like,
yeah, he's
okay. OBP, it's like he's like the most.
I don't understand why Urias wouldn't be pushing Perella off.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I think he would. He would push Perella off for me, and I would see what Villanueva has. But that's a valid point.
Reference. I mean. Pro is kind of the same kind of guy. Didn't get established, you know what I mean? So,
yeah,
bounced around the Yankee system for a while, and that's a tough system to crack. With you know, but Padres are going to get really interesting in a few years. None of these players, the roster is going to look completely different, and they're going to be very, very good. But
I should just abandon my terrible Orioles and become a Padres fan. At least have something to root for.
The Orioles fans, Justin, two in a row.
Now you weren't here last week, so.
Right.
But
sorry.
We've had two Orioles fans in the month of May because we figure they're pretty drunk by the time we get to August.
So that's
yeah,
the hard following.
We don't have anything better to do. We don't need to watch any games or anything. We already know the outcomes.
At least Chris Tillman's coming back.
Oh man. You know, I used to love Chris Tillman just because it was like we didn't have an ace and he was like the guy that would at least go out there and pitch well. And he just I feel bad for him because the whole like arbitration system and everything just screwed him over, because by the time he became a free agent his shoulder is just toast. Like he just can't do anything. Like he's out there just throwing like 87 mile per hour meatballs that they're just destroying.
Oh, poor guys. All right, we're gonna take
making a couple million this year, so I feel terrible for him.
We're gonna take a quick break back right after this. All right, let's go ahead and we've covered all hitters. Now we're gonna cover a bunch of pitchers. Daniel Mengden has been absolutely hot the last week or two. Still doesn't strike anybody out, even no matter how hot he is. But, Matt, any thoughts on Daniel Mengden moving forward?
I like 93-inning cameo with the A's last year before he went down with a little injury and crowded playing time concerns. And he did well in that campaign, too. Right now he's running super hot. Over his last 33 innings, he's only given up 4 earned runs, and he has a 17-inning scoreless streak right now. He's, like you said, he's not getting it with the ground or with the strikeouts, but he's getting a lot of ground balls. In his last start in particular, a two-hit shutout, he had 13 groundouts, so that'll get it done. He's not as vulnerable against lefties so far. I do think that changes. From the power department, they've touched him up a little bit, but the batting average is only 185 against lefties for Mengden, who normally has a little bit of split issues. Last year, he got a little lucky against righties, and now it seems to be the other way around. Again, he's much better at home, but last year he was weird and was better away. So he's just kind of, maybe he's the modern-day Julio Teheran, where nothing makes sense. But... Daniel Mengden is he's a guy I like, man. You got to ride him out. I'm sure with this stretch he's been on, it's been a couple starts now in a row, he's probably owned, but if he's not, get him and ride him out till you can, because it's been fantastic. He's a fun guy to watch pitch, too. He's got the weird antics. Kind of looks like he's a flashback to the 60s and 70s with the exaggerated windup and the shitty mustache, and it's
an 80-grade mustache. Don't you talk shit about that mustache.
20-grade in my opinion.
Yeah, it's off. That's an awful take. Walter, what are your thoughts on Mengden?
Oh, man. We come for the bad Cubs takes and stick around for the mustache takes. Oh, but, man. Yeah, I'm not a fan of the mustache either. Sorry. I can't deal with it. But, yeah, I think the one thing that everyone, when they look at, when they're doing like fantasy analysis, they automatically jump to the strikeouts and kind of just disregard guys like Mengden. And I have to admit, I kind of do it too. But the one thing that he's been able to do is he's a really low whip guy. Like he has a low whip this year. It's 0.96 right now, and it was 1.05 last year. And even if you think the ERA is going to regress, I think he can run like a 1.15 whip, something around there, because he just doesn't walk anyone. And whip is really hard to find, especially with guys off the wire, because you're chasing guys that are trying to strike out, that are strikeout guys, and usually they come with high walk rates, like Caleb Smith that we talked about. Like, even though he's been really good, his whip is going to be kind of ugly because of that walk rate. And I think that's kind of where Mengden's hidden value is, because people are just going to gloss over his strikeout rate and kind of say he's not valuable. And I think I really like him. He's a funky guy, and I really like that A's rotation. Like, they always seem to come with guys like Mengden who give you fantasy value, and no one really wants him. I mean, like, Trevor Cahill is pitching like an ace right now. Like, he threw 7 or 8 shutout innings today. And I don't know. I like the A's rotation overall.
They always get a lot out of it. They squeeze as much as they can out of those oranges, man. They get every little drop out of those pitchers.
Have to, because the oranges are tinies. They're the little cuties.
The little cutie ones.
Yeah, they buy for kids for their lunches.
As an Orioles fan, I can tell you that not all teams get all the juice out of the orange.
No.
So
the Orioles have been trying to put trying to press stones for a very, very long time. So
the Orioles are also only getting their oranges from one part of the world, and they're cutting themselves off from the best oranges.
Please don't get me started on this. Please don't.
All right. I'm going to disagree with you guys because I don't see why you would want Daniel Mangdon. It's a very, very unsexy profile.
I said, you got to just write it out so you can, man.
I mean,
the blow-up
potential is so great. Look how much hard contact he's giving up right now. Almost 40% hard contact. There's no way the BABIP stays as low as it is right now, considering, one, how much hard contact he's giving up, and two, the defense behind him, especially with Marcus Semien. Now, Matt Chapman has definitely helped that infield defense, but Marcus Semien playing short, Jed Lowry playing second, I think there are going to be some issues going forward in terms of making.
You definitely have to use him as next start. It's against Tampa Bay at home.
Tampa Bay's a top 10 scoring offense this year.
Yeah, I don't buy it.
I don't either, but right now they are, and so you can't tell me, well, I'm going to ride the hot streak with Daniel Mangdon, but you're not going to ride the hot streak with Tampa Bay's offense. So
it works both ways.
Yeah, I mean, you can't use that as, that'd be cherry-picking, your stats.
Tampa Bay didn't score any runs on them today, did they? 1-0. Oh, no, they did. They won
1-0
in the 13th.
Trevor Cahill.
Yeah. Those dominant A's starters, they can't handle them.
And speaking of which, since you brought it up, who's still worried about Chris Archer? No? No one? All right.
Okay. I'm concerned.
Oh, just stop it. He's been fantastic this month.
I better not be concerned. I own him in every dynasty league I play in. So
I will say right now is the perfect time to sell Chris Archer.
It is, 100%.
Like, everybody thinks Chris Archer is... I don't know. I'm just not really
for years, or is he just struggled? It's weird.
I think he's been a bit overrated for a couple of years, but the way everybody jumped off of that bandwagon at the start of this season was like the Titanic was going down.
You're kind of bad because Mike's not here to defend his boy, but
Mike's the one who shitted on him the most on this podcast this year.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Let's move on to another guy who seems perpetually underrated, but I'm wondering if he's starting to become a little bit overrated. Jay Happ right now has been fantastic. It's been a little bumpy more recently, but still a 3.84 ERA, over 10 strikeouts per 9 this year, which is a huge jump from what we've seen in the past.
Yep.
Walter, what are your thoughts on Jay Happ?
Yeah, Happ is another one of those guys where it's like he's kind of, well, last year he was pretty bad with it, but he's always had like a decent whip, and I think he gets kind of passed along as well because you have that whole AL East bias where I don't know if it's a bias per se, actually. I think it's like people just don't want pitchers in that division because there is a couple bad ballparks, and I don't know. He's pitching really well this year. I honestly have no clue why. Nothing has changed. He doesn't have a velocity bump. He hasn't really changed his pitch mix. I honestly have no clue how he's doing it. The age 35 breakout. Are you guys buying that? I just think the strikeouts are just gonna come back to what they were before.
I agree with you on that. I think the strikeouts will come back to, even last year he was 8.79, and the four previous years before that he was under 8, and he was up over 8.7 per 9 last season. Now he's up at 10.8. Obviously, I think that's coming down. But Jay Happ, man, I think a lot of what he does, he's the guy. Let me know how you guys feel about this. He's the guy, like, when you're doing your preseason evaluation or starting pitching. For me, he's one of the hardest guys to rank. Because he's boring. There's nothing exciting about him. He's in the American League East, and all the, the ballparks are terrible to pitch in, including his home park. But he just puts numbers up. but he doesn't do it in an exciting way. Like, he's a guaranteed guy to be a top 40 pitcher almost every year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And but would you bet on him doing it again? Like, I think right now you have to, because it's been, what, 4 years in a row. He's out. He's his peripherals, I know XFIP and FIP, I know people hate those stats, but they're good, decent predictors anyways. And he's, you know, it says he should be pitching a little better than he is.
Mm-hmm. And his Sierra is even better than that.
Yeah, I this is kind of a guy I might trade for if I have an opportunity to be honest, because he's extremely solid, he's boring, and he's not going to cost you as much as he probably should cost you.
The best part,
it's so weird.
The best part about a guy like Jay Happ is the fact that you know he's going to finish as like a top 40 starter, but you only have to pay like top 70 starter prices.
Right. I'm trying to find his ADP for this season. It wasn't. I'm going to pull it up. It wasn't.
Yeah, it's just. It's so weird to look at too. Like if you sort by K percentage, it's 9th Jay Happ, 10th Luis Severino. It's just so crazy to see.
He was going pick ADP according to RotoWire's information. 249.3, yeah. Which is ADP.
So, I mean,
so
like,
in your 12-team leagues, he's going in the 21st round.
He's one of those guys that aren't going to win you your league, but like you need to have these kind of rotation stabilizers on your team. And I think people kind of forget about these guys late in drafts. They don't want to draft the Jay Happs. They don't want to draft the Kyle Gibsons. They want to draft like these guys that they have huge upside that may not see the majors or may not stay in the majors very long. And sometimes those guys pay off huge. But the majority of times, the Jay Happs of the world are the ones that are actually producing for your teams. You know, they're the ones, you know, stabilizing your ratios. They're the ones that are giving you the extra Ks, not these guys that you're either streaming in and out or you're, you know, shooting the moon with. You know, how many people are still waiting on Tyler Glass now to be that guy?
Oh, man. That one hurts.
Yeah. All right, let's move on and talk about Ryan Yarborough, another guy who has been good as of late. Walter, you said you've been using him a little bit, so when you start, what are your thoughts on Ryan Yarborough?
Yeah, I used him. I used him one time in one of the DFS tournaments and did pretty well with him in his first. What are we calling it? What is Brian Kenny trying to term the Sergio opening, Romo experience?
The opener, or something like that.
The opener. That's what it is. The opener.
So stupid.
Yeah, in his first start with Sergio Romo opening for him. But against the Orioles the other day, he looked really good. And Paul Martin, my co-host, he sent me something about it where it's like all three of his pitches that he threw were between like 2,000 to 2,100 RPM. So he's got like high spin, everything. So I think he's pretty interesting. Even though he doesn't throw very hard, that's kind of the problem. But he's got a pretty balanced arsenal, so I think he can get by without overpowering stuff.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Yarborough?
Yet another pitcher the Mariners could probably use that they used to have. They are approaching Baltimore Orioles-esque levels on as far as pitchers. Mariners, they're building an impressive resume. But Yarborough, I'm going to call him a starting pitcher, even though he's kind of in the swingman role. The breaking ball took a step forward from a little bit of what I've seen. It's been classified a curveball or a slider, depending on what resource you use and what scouting report you read. He's always kind of a fascinating guy. When I used to evaluate the Mariners system, because they didn't really have much, and looking at Yarborough, you thought you could squeeze a little bit out of that one, and it looks like Tampa has. They're utilizing him in matchups that are completely mostly in his favor by, you see, starting Romo with righty heavy lineups or and using Yarborough to carve up both guys. But I think that's selling him a little short, because he can get both guys out. I think he could kind of settle into like a Mike Montgomery-esque kind of career if he gets that long, and he could be very successful for a long time. He's a very hard player because he's getting kind of yo-yoed around, but he's still having success. I'm not sure I buy into it for this year, but I think long term, I really think he can be a nice back end of your staff in some of these deep keeper leagues we all play in, because Tampa Bay does get a lot out of their pitchers as well. It's normally a lot of guys with this kind of profile that don't pop out at you that turn out to be, you know, really nice arms. And I think Yarbrough can be that guy. He's a little bit older. He's 26 years old already as far as prospects go. But he's kind of flown under the radar. It was a decent – he's picked out of Old Dominion, big 6'5 lefty. So he's a fourth-round pick. So Seattle, you know, it's not like he came out of nowhere, I guess I should say. But I like Yarbrough, but I'm trying to keep my expectations and my perception in check a little bit, because – I'm not saying that he's going to become one, you know, a top 40 starter ever, but I think he's going to be really, really solid for a long time. It just might not be fantasy relevant.
Yeah, I don't think he's very interesting at all. He's a bad fastball guy.
Yeah, but if you start using him like the Rays are, yeah, and that's the thing. Montgomery doesn't have a really good fastball either, but he throws five different pitches, and I think Yarbrough can kind of, he does that as well if you classify the curveball and slider differently.
Well, but Montgomery's not good either.
Oh, my gosh.
Montgomery's not bad.
But how many leagues are you using Mike Montgomery in?
Well, right now, not a lot.
Exactly.
You would have done well if you used Mike Montgomery today.
Yeah, maybe, but, you know, I don't want to... You know where Yarbrough is going to be interesting in is in leagues with, head-to-head leagues... you know, that
where like
you
don't a have start use, limit, or not use, like yeah. a start limit,
where you've yeah. got a start limit, because getting his stat underneath a start limit is perfect.
Here's a game for us to watch. Guess who Yarbrough faces next time out? Daniel Mengden in the A's.
Oh God,
there we go.
Good job, Justin. Way to go.
I don't drink, but that is probably the only way you could get me to watch that is if you got me hammered beforehand.
Oh, that's sweet.
There'll probably be about six people in the stands for that game.
If it's in Oakland, for sure.
It is. Well, either one.
Well, yeah, actually, Tampa, too, right?
Yeah. I will live tweet the shit out of that game. 3:35 start. I don't know what time that is according to RotoWire. Probably local time, so let me guess that's about, 5:30 my time? I should be home from work on Thursday. So right, I'm going to sit down and get a, you know, light some candles and watch Daniel Mengden and Ryan Yarbrough.
That sounds absolutely awful.
Does it? I think does it sound worse than the next group of things we're talking about? Because I don't think it does.
Yeah.
No, I'd much rather watch that game than talk about these ones or watch these guys pitch. Oh my God!
All right. Well, let's with that rousing introduction. Why don't we talk about our last subject? And it's pretty much just give me a name or two that you're looking at investing in if you're desperate for saves. The Rays, Blue Jays, Reds, Pirates, closing situations, all up in flux because of injuries and a domestic violence situation, and the Rays trading everybody on their roster. So we'll start with you, Matt, since you were so excited to talk about these guys. Give me a couple names that you are kind of investing in, or your overall thoughts. If you could just say, screw it, I don't want to play in these fires.
No, saves are a stat category, so... I mean, there have to be one. If you need them in fantasy, you kind of get caught at the mercy of situations like this. I threw out a bid in TGFBI on Jose Alvarado. Not expecting to get him because I could use the closer, but I'm not even sure if he is the closer. Today he was used in the seventh inning, I believe. But I put $15 out there, and I ended up getting him. Mm-hmm. Which I thought was interesting because I saw a lot of other leagues. He went for over $100. I saw.
Yeah, I got him for over $100. But yeah, I need saves. So I need everything in my invitation.
Yeah, my team's not great either. But I think Ryan Yarbrough went for $18 actually in the same league. Interesting. Didn't see that. But I guess that's the guy I'm looking at here for the Blue Jays. I think the guy to pick up. Tapera had the last two saves. It wasn't great. I still think Sungwon Oh ends up with that job. I don't know why I think that, but I just do. I think Tapera is – I mean, you saw what was going on with him. He doesn't look very good in that role. Too much. He gives up a lot of contact. For the Reds, it's Jared Hughes, and I'm completely off that.
Mm-hmm.
And in Pittsburgh, there's a couple interesting names. It looks like Rivero's not going to go on the DL yet, but ultimately, you know how these situations end most of the time. with elbow forearm soreness, and he's going to take. They took the day off today, which they didn't need him anyways. He's supposed to be ready to go tomorrow if they need him. Tomorrow being Tuesday, I don't see why they would do that. They just signed him to a nice contract extension as well, so I don't know what they're going to do there. But Pittsburgh's got some nice arms. Edgar Santana is their high leverage guy right now. He's kind of the chief setup guy for Rivero, or Vasquez, I should say, is his new name, I guess. He's the chief setup guy, and Richard Rodriguez has looked fantastic in the limited bullpen time there. And then Tyler Glasnow is always kind of lurking on the peripheral there, but he walks too many guys for me to be even involved in the ninth inning, but you never know.
Pittsburgh, he's still starting in the minor leagues, isn't he?
No, he's up in the bullpen.
Oh, is he really?
Been in the bullpen most of the season, I believe.
Oh, wow. He's been in rolling relief there. Wow.
He's hit 100 miles an hour out of the bullpen, but he's still the same problems. It's a cautionary tale on tall pitchers, man. 6'8", and you can't control it. Maybe the walk rate's not...
Hey, he's got a 309 Sierra, so there's hope for Tyler Glasnow.
14 walks in 27 innings, so that's not great. 37 strikeouts, though.
It's gonna happen. Trust me, guys. Just trust me on this one. It'll happen. It may be in like 5 years, but it will.
It's never gonna happen. All right, Walter, what are your thoughts on all these closing situations?
Yeah, for long term, the guy for the Rays that I like, I don't know if it's gonna come to fruition this year, but Diego Castillo he's in Triple A. I think he has like a 0.96 ERA in Triple A this year. It's something. It's really low. It's under one. I know that
he's
for sure.
Around a bit in the minor leagues too.
He was the guy I told some people about before the season started. Was a guy to. Like, if you just needed a real deep flyer in Dynasty Leagues, just look at him, because he had a huge K rate in AAA last year, and I think everyone knew that Colomé was going to get traded this year sometime.
Yeah, so, I correct myself. He actually hasn't bounced around. The other Diego Castillo has, but he has not. He's put good numbers in the minor leagues. So I
think he could eventually be the guy in Tampa. I think for right now, I don't know. Chaz Rowe.
I have a hard time with Tampa calling up somebody and then putting them in the closer spot, because you know how worried they are about arbitration numbers and keeping guys priced down. I think they're more likely to take some washed up veteran and make him the closer.
Against
what I said about Alvarado, but I think ultimately that's probably what they do.
Well, to my next point, Chaz Rowe pitched the ninth in a non-save chance. I believe it was Sunday against the Orioles. So I don't know if that's him. I put a small bid on him in like a deep dynasty league. I don't really want to invest too much in this bullpen. I think I did what you did, Matt, with Alvarado, just put like a $15 or $16 bid on him, and I think in TGFBI he went for like 180 in my league. Yeah, he went 187 in my league, and I'm not too sure he's like even remotely the guy. Maybe he is, but I'm not too invested on.
I wasn't too confident either.
So I just put a small bid, and if I got him, then okay. If not, then it's whatever. With the Blue Jays, I would say I don't want to invest in their bullpen, but in TGFBI, I have Clippard and I have Tapera after this week. So I'm just hoping one of them becomes the guy, and it's not like Sungwon Oh, but I think Tapera is the best pitcher out of the group, which, as we all know, that has nothing to do with who's going to be the closer. But I think Tapera is probably the guy there, and Jared Hughes, I just want no part of that. That's just an accident waiting to happen. I don't want Jared Hughes. He's the Reds closer. If you really really need saves, I guess go
number
get
one's
him.
The Reds. So what are you going to
get? Yeah, so
how many wins are there really going to be?
Save a week, if you're lucky.
Yeah, and then the Pirates, it's so weird, because it's Vasquez, it's like he said he heard a pop in his elbow, which to me that means that's a long injury. And then they're like, oh, he's not going on the DL. So I have no clue. I didn't put any bids on any of that Pirates bullpen, because I honestly have no clue. Like, Richard Rodriguez, he seems like the best guy there. And there's just like a, well, other than Glasnow, obviously, other than him. But
of course. Understood.
Of course, other than Glasnow. But no, Glasnow, I don't know. If you catch him on his right night,
you're like,
how does anyone ever hit him?
He was a top 10 prospect in a lot of circles.
Yeah, but I mean, even now, you watch him against big league hitters, and it's like the walks that are the problem. But
yeah. it's when he loses his mechanics because he's so tall, he can't repeat them.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for it all to come together with Glasnow.
He's a sleeper though, 4.8 ERA, but his FIP is a 2.8 for this year for Glasnow. So,
All right, well,
guy there.
I'll finish out by kind of echoing what you guys have said. A lot of these situations really suck. This is why, you know, and I love how people are using these situations to be like, oh, this is why you don't pay for
terrible
saves.
Analysis.
No, this is exactly why you do pay for saves.
Right.
So that way you don't have to play around in these situations and waste your fab and chase and guess the wrong guy. Because like I said, you know, I spent in TGFBI, I spent, $100-something to get Jose Alvarado, and you know what's going to happen is Chaz Rowe is going to be, earn the spot or win the spot, in Walter's case, O is going to be the guy who ends up, coming out of it with the most saves.
The final boss.
Or it'll be a situation where each of them, equally split the saves the rest of the way, and then you're stuck going, oh great, well there were 15 saves over the last 2.5 months, but I got 5 of them. So this is exactly why you invest. Maybe you don't want to invest in the in the Kenley Jansons in Aroldis Chapman's of the world, but this is why I love the Edwin Diaz's, the Cody Allen's of the world, that are guys that aren't going to necessarily lose their spot unless they're absolutely atrocious, but you don't have to spend a ton on them, because I hate dealing with these situations. Of all these groups, skills wise, I really love what Richard Rodriguez has been doing this season, and I think he would be the most likely to jump right into the closer role if Vasquez does hit the DL, which I think we all kind of expect him to. But this is another situation where they actually have some pretty decent arms in Santana and Feliz as well. I just think that, like Tampa Bay, Pittsburgh doesn't want to ratchet up Michael Feliz's arbitration numbers. And
yep.
Rodriguez is already a guy who's a free agent. They're not having to pay him in arbitration. So I think he may get the first shot at the role.
Maybe someday Major League Baseball will have a system where they're incentivized to put the best players in the best roles.
Why would they want to do that?
I mean, you look at a guy, I know we're talking apples and oranges here, but Vlad Guerrero's hitting .433 in 178 at-bats. Let me repeat that. .433 in 178 at-bats in AA with more extra base hits than strikeouts, but he's not ready yet for some reason.
Nope.
So.
Yeah, they just have to play for the Nationals, who just bring up whoever, right?
Well, when you're losing Bryce Harper next year and you want to win a World Series before he goes, because you're not going to re-sign him, you'll do whatever it takes.
Yep, pretty much.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap us up for this episode. Walter, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. It was a lot of fun getting to talk to you guys. Yeah, it's awesome, especially being a fan of the podcast, being able to come on.
Well, we're happy to have you. We'll definitely have you back on again. Why don't you remind people where you can reach on social media and then plug all your work?
Yeah, Real Fake Walter on Twitter. I know it's just such a great Twitter handle. But I do the podcast at LennyManicFantasySports.com, and I write at Big3Sports.com. But yeah, just check out whatever I have coming out.
Matt, where can you reach? What are you working on?
MD Tomp FWFB, look for an update for my prospect list coming out before the draft here. Probably going to go 200 deep just like last time. And there's some really, really big prospect stuff coming down the pipeline that you'll see this fall. Really, really excited. Don't want to give away too many details about it yet.
You can DM me on Twitter. I know what's happening.
But it's potentially a game changer. So
it's not, but it's pretty cool.
Oh, man. Stealing right, thunder right off from underneath me.
It's all right. That's how I roll.
Okay. I am also one of the most famous people on Twitter. So
you are not.
522 likes now, 161 retweets, and 84 comments since we last talked about it.
That's actually that's pretty good. Let's see. Don't forget you can reach Matt on Twitter at MDTopFW.
Everyone already knows where to find me. Trust
me. You know they only know because I retweeted that for you. So
that's damn it.
Half as many followers.
So there was a plan. There was a plan behind that for you. Huh?
Yeah, exactly. I just pumping up your stats today. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. I know most of you already do, but go ahead and just do it if you're not. You can email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can follow all of my work at Fangraphs, Fantasy Alarm, Fantrax. Follow the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational at TGFBI. Hear me on Sleeper in the Bus, on the podcast here, on the Tout Wars Hour, on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. And I think that's about it. So
you're excited for the Cavs and Warriors again?
I don't even know what's happening in that game.
Over. Golden State.
No, it's over.
Oh, Golden State
Cavs
won.
Cavs and Warriors.
The NBA wasted our time for 9 months when we knew.
Hey! Come on! The Rockets could have easily won that series.
They should have won that series.
So should have Boston. Yeah. But I think everyone kind of knew it was going to be Cavs Warriors in October when the season started.
I'm just bummed that I missed the end of the Capitals game because I was talking to you guys.
Did they win?
Honestly,
nobody cares. Hockey sucks.
Oh. All right, that's going to do it for Matt, Walter, and myself. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.
Got you good, Mason.